going to talk this morning together and study together about dancing. If you want to turn there, 1 Timothy chapter 4, in verse 12, here Paul is writing to young Timothy, who's actually a preacher in the church. And he says to Timothy, "Let no man despise your youth, but be an example of the believers in word, in conversation, in charity, in spirit, in faith, in purity." Now, while that is written to Timothy as a preacher, the same would apply to all of our young people. They need to be examples. And we have this in our Sunday morning class with the young ones that we have, first to third graders. We study this very thing of their need to be examples to the other members of the congregation, to the Christians, even that are older than them, that they're supposed to show those people how that they should be living. And we have given some simpler definitions of some of those things. And we tell them, don't let anybody look down on you because you're young. But be an example, or show others how to talk, that didn't work, how to live, that's the conversation there, even though we think of conversation as talking. In the King James Version, when it uses conversation, it's talking about your way of life or how you live. And in love, the way you love. And in spirit. And in faith, the way you believe in God. And in purity, in keeping yourself pure or clean from sin. And as young people think about those things, for that matter, those older people as well, as we think about those things that Paul tells Timothy and that certainly apply to all of us as Christians, that we need to keep ourselves in those areas. The way we talk, the way we live, the way we love, the way we believe in God, the way we keep ourselves clean from sin, pure. When we think about those things, those areas, in connection with dancing, we're going to see a large contrast. Dancing oftentimes involves words, phrases, and speech that's not conducive to being a Christian. It involves, certainly, living a lifestyle, being in places and going to places that are not places that a Christian should be. It involves also, instead of love, many times lust, which is it's the devil's cheap counterfeit of love. Lust. The desire, a physical desire, not based on any true spiritual strength, but just a physical reaction to hormones and visual things that you see with your eyes, and that's all it is. But also in terms of purity, dancing leads to boys and girls, men and women, touching one another in places that they ought not be touching each other if they're not married to each other. In many cases, husbands and wives going and being touched by other people that's not their husband and wife, being held close. Not purity. It involves movements that at best could be described as lewd and in some cases just downright provocative and lust producing. It also involves a mode of dress in many cases, clothing, or rather the lack of appropriate clothing. Whether it be tight, form-fitting clothing that shows off every curve, or whether it be short skirts, low-cut dresses, halter tops that show as much skin as possible. So we see already that there are things about dancing that just don't fit with what Paul tells Timothy here. Now, many times he'll say, "Oh, well, yeah, but with the young kids, with the little kids, when they're in grade school and junior high," the key is that we have to understand. understand, whatever they practice doing at those younger ages, they're going to continue doing, and they're going to expand on it. It's very difficult, if not impossible, to tell a child that something is okay now, and then 3 years down the road, or 5 years down the road, or 7 years down the road, or 10 years down the road, then say, it's not okay anymore. It's very difficult for them to... It was okay before, why is it not okay now? Think about that. Think about that in your own life. If the government suddenly makes a law that says that something that was okay is suddenly not okay anymore. I've done this in a lot of states with smoking, where smoking had been something that was accepted. People smoked everywhere. And now I think New Jersey or New York, I think, has passed a law that no smoking in any restaurants. Let me tell you, there are going to be some smokers in New York that are going to have a real hard time with that, because they've been living their whole lives thinking they could smoke in those restaurants if they wanted to. They could smoke in those businesses if they wanted to. When you've told somebody something's okay, and then you turn around and say, no, it's not anymore. It's three times harder, at least, to get them to change that behavior than if you just tell them from the start, this is not acceptable. Now we're going to look at some more things about the Christian, or even the young person whose parents are Christians, or who at least wants to behave in a Christian-like manner, even though he himself or she herself may not yet be a Christian. We have young people who aren't Christians yet, but we want to raise them so that they will be Christians. We want to teach them those proper principles so that we don't have to try to change everything when they grow up. Oh, it's nearly impossible to take somebody that's full-grown and that's learned all the ways of the devil and turn them around. That's hard. Some of us know how hard that is because we were there. How much easier it is if you get them going right from the very start. So first of all, what is dancing? Dancing, in its broadest definition, consists of the rhythmic movement of any or all parts of the body in accordance with some scheme of individual or concerted action with others, which is expressive of emotions or ideas. That's a pretty vague definition. Basically just saying that it's rhythmic. In other words, that's why they dance to music, because there's a rhythm to it. And their movement, in some cases, just certain parts of the body, in other cases, any parts of the body. And we know there are a wide variety of different kinds of dancing. There is, speaking of dancing in the Bible, in the Old Testament, the term dancing is used on many occasions. When, after they escaped from Egypt and crossed the Red Sea, the Israelites were led by Miriam in a dance. And again, when we look at dance in its broadest definition, it's just a movement of certain body parts to either get individually or as a group. Sometimes there is a distinction drawn in modern society between dancing and choreography. And choreographing is also a moving of your body part in a certain rhythm, in a certain way, to fit with a certain group. But in the Bible, in the Old Testament, dancing is used as a way of praising God. Miriam, with the other women, went out and danced a dance to God after God had delivered them from the Egyptians. David, when he brought the ark to Jerusalem, he danced before Jehovah with all his might. 2 Samuel 6:14 tells us. He wasn't dancing for others, he was dancing for God. Now certainly in the New Testament, there's no indication that dancing as a form of worship to God is allowable. There's no example of it in the New Testament. The only example beyond the Old Testament record of dancing is a negative one. And that means a case where Herod's unlawful wife had a daughter who danced for him, and because of his lust for her, his desire for her, he was brought to the point where he offered her anything wanted. That tells us the power that dancing can have over someone. He was so enthralled, so enticed by the way that she moved her body, and probably by the clothing or the lack thereof that she was wearing when she engaged in that activity, that he promised her he'd give her anything she wanted up to half his kingdom. Now, you tell me, what would somebody have to do to get you to promise them half of a kingdom? See, dancing is a very emotional thing, and it draws people to do things that, in their right mind, they wouldn't even do. Herod would have never promised her that if he'd been in full control of himself. But because of the fact that he had lost control, and she now had control over him and his thoughts and his emotions, he was willing to offer her anything. Let's continue on in looking at more modern dances. Certainly, no one would try to claim that the dances that go on at proms, or at dances that the schools have, or dances that go on in the clubs has any religious significance. Nobody had claimed that, there might be somebody. You never know. People say anything. But we know better. We know that there's no religious thing. We know people aren't going there to praise God in any way. No, quite the opposite. They're going there to praise their own fleshly, physical desires. There are several things that we need to consider with dancing. First of all is the things with which it is associated. Now, being associated with something does not in and of itself make something sinful. For example, you may have a pool table or a video game in a bar. Well, just because that pool table or that video game is in that bar doesn't mean that all playing of pool or video games is as bad as drinking and being drunk. So associations are not 100% clear. But they do help us to see what kind of activities go on with dancing. And think about the atmosphere of the dance. The lights are turned down low. What does the Bible say? Those who love the darkness because their deeds are evil. That's what John tells us in the first chapter of John. We talk about Jesus being the light of the world. And he came into the world. But they didn't like him. They hated him because they loved the darkness because their deeds were evil. That's why you turn the lights down low so nobody can see what you're doing. Then you see also that in many cases, dancing is associated with alcohol. In many cases, drugs. In many cases, other kinds of, the kind of music that is being played is at best unchristian in nature. I wouldn't even want to begin to recite the lyrics of the songs to which the young people dance. The cursing, the suggestive wording, suggestive was what it was back in the 60s. Now, it's just, they say it. They flat out tell you. The different body parts graphically describe what is going on. And then, of course, the other things that are involved, in many cases, fighting, because one boy danced with another boy's girlfriend, or in cases where adultery occurs with adults, where adultery occurs because a woman and another man were dancing and wound up going home together instead of going home with their respective mates. See, when you see the kinds of things that are associated with dancing, just that in and of itself has to make you wonder, how good of an activity is this to be involved in? Is it something that's going to build the Christian up and make the Christian closer to God? I don't think so. While the word dancing specifically is never condemned in Scripture, we want to look at a couple of different things. Galatians chapter 5 and verse 21. Galatians 5 and verse 19 said, "But the works of the flesh are manifest, which are these. And then he begins to list them. In verse 19 and also in verse 21, he uses two words that could describe dancing to a T. He says, adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lasciviousness. Now, lasciviousness is a big word that we have difficulty sometimes trying to understand today because it's not one we use very often. Another translation translates that word debauchery. But lasciviousness involves, lasciviousness involves all kinds of sinful behavior that goes on between two individuals. It covers all sorts of touching and holding and dancing, which certainly the erotic and suggestive movements certainly would fall into that category of lasciviousness. He goes on to list some more in verse 20, and then in verse 21 he says, envying, murders, drunkenness, reveling. And that could no more, there's no word I can think of that could better describe some of the dance parties that go on than reveling. People are simply doing just that. They are reveling in their own physical desire for sexual gratification. They're just jumping up and down to try to get out there and touch and hold and watch and look and lust. Reverence. In fact, one translation goes on to even, instead of the word reveling, uses the word orgy. And what other word could better describe a kind of sexual impurity that's going on? We see then that these two things, this lust and lewdness that's involved in lasciviousness, this, as reveling is described, boisterous merrymaking or festivity, revelry. Sounds like a dance, doesn't it? Everybody hollering and screaming and music playing loud and people touching one another and dancing together, holding each other close, and people ill-dressed, for lack of a better word. And what about the Christian? In the Christian's life, the Spirit is to rule. The Christian life says you're to be led by the Spirit, by spiritual things, not by the works of the flesh, these things that have been described and listed. The Spirit is to have control. Self-control. Goodness. Those are things that can't be associated with two people pressing one another's bodies so closely in such a sexual way when they're not even married. It doesn't fit. The Christian's first concern is his own soul. And as we saw in Timothy, he has to keep himself, or she has to keep herself, pure. Unspotted from the world, James says, pure religion before God the Father is this. And he says the first thing is basically doing good deeds, checking on the widows and the orphans and caring for them. And then the other part is keeping yourself unspotted from the world. It's difficult to be unspotted by the world if you're rubbing up that close to them. Because the spots that are on them are going to run up. Can you imagine trying to wrestle with a pig and come out clean? Now, can you imagine trying to dance with sinfulness and come out pure on the other side? When you rub yourself up close to something, whatever it is going to come off on you. It's going to rub off. It's just the way it works. The second second thing we have to understand is not only is the Christian concerned with his own or her own soul, but the Christian is concerned about the souls of others. Even if, and if is the biggest word in English language, even if you think that you could dance without being enticed to lust, without having sinful thoughts, without engaging in sinful behavior, if you think you could accomplish that, then you still have to consider the fact that that other person that you're dancing with may not be able to. The Bible says in Matthew chapter 18, Matthew chapter 18 and verse 6. But whoso shall offend one of these little ones which believe in me, and by offend there, offend means to cause to sin or to cause to stumble. So whoever causes one of the little ones that believes in Jesus, now by little one, that doesn't necessarily mean little child, anyone, any little one who believes in Jesus, to sin, notice what it says, it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and that he were drowned in the depths of the sea. See what that tells you? Even if you think you could go out and dance without sinning, if you caused somebody else to sin by your dancing, it'd be better if you just tie a big old rock around your neck and drown yourself in the sea than to cause somebody else to sin by your actions. To cause somebody else to lust after you. To have sinful thoughts, impure thoughts. Notice then what he goes on to say. He says, woe unto the world because of offenses. For it must need be that offenses come, but woe to that one by whom the offense comes. He says, woe unto you if you cause somebody else to sin. And yet in many cases, those who claim innocence in dance are doing just that. They're causing others to sin because of the things that they are doing. They're causing others to have lustful thoughts. They're causing others to fight, to even, in many cases, for a husband or wife to cheat on their spouse. Now, certainly we know that each individual is responsible for his or her own actions. That's not the point here. We know that those people will be held accountable for the things that they do. But as Christians, we should never want to do anything that might encourage or in any way influence someone else to do something wrong. And by dancing, particularly when we speak of the dance as it is today, where lust and, in fact, sexual contact is such a common thing, how could a Christian engage in that activity? How could Christian parents let their children engage in that activity thinking that that's a wholesome activity for the child to engage in? And I know parents many times say, well, you know, I did it when I was a kid. You know, well, my parents sent me to the dances and it. As parents, don't we want better for our children than what we had ourselves? Don't we want our children to be saved from those sinful situations and kept from those kinds of influences? I mean, can you imagine a parent saying, well, you know, my parents gave me cigarettes and beer when I was a kid, so I give it to my kids. And I know there are parents who did that to their kids. They gave them beer and cigarettes to smoke it. But don't you want better for your kids? Sure you do. Now, we have cases where parents have done all sorts of sinful things to their children. But that doesn't mean we want to do those same things to our children. We want to help our children to grow up free from sin, pure and holy, untainted and unspotted by the world. Galatians 5, 16 and 17 says, this I say then, walk in the Spirit, shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh. For the flesh lusts against the Spirit, and the Spirit is against the flesh. And these are contrary the one to the other, so that you cannot do the things that you would. So you've got a choice to make. You can either be of the world, or you can be of the Spirit. You can be of the flesh, or you can be of heavenly things. This is the choice. That's the line we've got to draw. We've got to draw that line clearly enough that we know which side we're on or the other. We can't be on both. He says that you cannot do what you would. You can't just do whatever you want to do. We're going to want and desire at times, our physical bodies are going to have fleshly desire. We're going to want things that we can't have as Christians or that we shouldn't have as Christians. There are going to be desires like that. But certainly we don't want to encourage those temptations by putting ourselves into tempting situations. Paul tells Timothy that if you'll resist the devil, he'll flee from you. But he also says that we are to flee temptation. There are going to be times, no matter how hard we try, that we are going to be tempted. When that happens, we need to resist the devil and he'll flee from us. But we also need to flee from temptation, from tempting situations. If I'm an alcoholic, I'm not going to go to a bar. If I'm an alcoholic, I'm not going to go to a restaurant and order a beer and have it sit right there in front of my plate and say, but I'm not going to drink it. Why would I put myself in that tempting situation? If I have a weakness in an area, and I know that almost all of us, because of our human nature, have sexual desires. They're natural, they're normal. God gave us those sexual desires. They in and of themselves are not sinful. But when I have those sexual desires, am I going to put myself in a place where I'm going to have those sexual desires toward people that I can't lawfully be by God's law, not by man's law. Man's law doesn't care anymore. But God's law still does. God cares. Am I going to put myself where I'm going to have those sexual desires toward individuals that I cannot, by God's law, fulfill those desires with? Certainly not. The only sexual desire that I'm to have is toward my wife. And in that marriage relationship, I can fulfill that sexual desire. But if I go to a dance where there are other women who are not my wife, and they're barely dressed or dressed in such tight clothing that I can see every curve, and I lust after those individuals, Jesus says I've sinned. Jesus said, they used to say, don't commit adultery. He said, that's what the old law said, don't commit adultery. But I say to you, anyone who looks at a woman to lust after her has already committed adultery in his heart. In other words, if I'm out there looking at these women dancing and lusting after them, I've already cheated on my wife right there in my heart. I haven't physically done it, but in my heart I have. For unmarried individuals, going out there and lusting after all these individuals, you hadn't committed adultery because you're not married, but you've committed fornication in your heart. You're thinking about doing things and having things done to you that are things that you should not be engaged in before you're married. Let's answer some of these questions. Does dancing incite me to unlawful, and again, that's by God's definitions, not by man's definitions of lawful, unlawful thoughts and desires? Now be honest. When you dance, if you do, does that make you think thoughts that are impure, think thoughts about doing things that you know the Bible teaches you not to do? About touching and being touched in ways that are reserved only for the marriage relationship? And be honest with yourself, because God knows your heart and your mind. There's no point in lying to yourself about it. I had a friend in high school. We had many discussions about dancing, and he didn't see anything wrong with it. And he told me, I can dance without any lustful thought. It doesn't bother me at all. And of course, I pointed out to him what I spoke of just a moment ago about causing someone else to sin by causing them lustful thoughts. They say, oh no, my girlfriend and I, we dance and it, we don't... Let me tell you something. They got married a short time later. You know why they got married? They got married because she was pregnant. Now, whether it was as a direct result of the dancing or not, I don't know. But it'd be hard to prove either way, but it'd be hard to try to say that that didn't play a role. When you're that close to somebody, it's almost impossible to avoid some physical excitement. Even if the individual is someone you're not even particularly interested in, it would still be hard to keep there from being physical attraction there. Does it provoke such thoughts in the mind of my partner? There again, getting back to the, it's not just you have to be concerned about. What about others? I've met lots of young ladies that, oh, dance, it doesn't, I'm not interested in those guys at all. What about those guys? And you're wearing your short little mini skirt and it's tight, and you're wearing that blouse that's so tight, and you want to tell me that that's not causing him to think thoughts he shouldn't? Does the dance serve to arouse emotions that were intended by God to be aroused only in the marriage relationship? Does the dance serve as a stepping stone to baser or more worldly things? And again, I call your attention to the fact that at dances many times there are drugs, alcohol, smoking, and, well, in many cases, other sexual behavior that may not be going on the dance floor, but in the cars outside or in the back room somewhere, wherever the dance is held. And the dance is the doorway to those things in many cases. Young people who would not come in contact with some of those things. Young people whose parents don't drink or do drugs, whose family doesn't drink or do drugs, who the only place they're going to come in contact with that kind of thing is at a place where it's going on. And they come in contact with it because of those things. Then we want to ask some other questions. Does the dance increase the respect which good, and by good, we don't mean popular people, we mean righteous people, have for me? If you were to find out that I go out to the club dancing every Friday and Saturday night, would that increase your respect for me? I dare say it would. So what would ever make another Christian think that others are going to think more highly of them for that activity? You wouldn't think more highly of me for that activity. Why should I think more highly of you for that activity? No, certainly not. It's not going to cause a greater respect. Does participating in the dance increase my love for God? Let me tell you, God will probably be one of the furthest things from your mind when you're dancing. Does the dance make me delight more in the reading of the Bible? Does the dance lead me to want to pray more to God? Oh, it might lead some people to pray. I can just see the young man on the side of the dance floor watching the girls dance and praying, oh, God, let me get over there and dance with her. But that's not the right kind of praying. People will pray for, it's amazing the things people will pray for, and they will. But that's not the right kind of prayer. And God's not going to answer that prayer. The devil might help you get that prayer answered, but God's not going to. Does the dance increase my zeal for the spread of the gospel and the spreading of the Lord's church? You're out there dancing, you proudly proclaim to people, I'm a Christian! Remember the story told of one young woman who was going off to college. I don't know whether it's a true story, but whether it actually happened, in essence, it's happened thousands of times. The young woman was going off to a secular school, like many of our young people have. And the mother was warning her as she left. She said, now, honey, you've grown up in the church, and you know what the Bible teaches. She said, but when you get up there to college at Alabama, you're going to find people who are not Christians, and they don't believe the same things you believe. And if they find out about, you know, when they know about you being a Christian and that you go to church and that you believe in the Bible and that you don't do these things that they do. You don't sleep around and you don't do drugs and you don't drink or smoke. When they find out those things, you know, they may not like you. They may make fun of you. They may not want to be your friend. And the girl said to her mother before she left, she said, "Mama, don't worry, they'll never know." Let me tell you, if Christians aren't living like Christians, the world will never know. That girl intended to blend in so completely with the worldliness into which she was going that the people would never know the difference. God called us to come out from among them and be ye separate. As Christians, we are not supposed to be of the world. We have to live in the world, yes. But we are not to be involved in the worldly things. And then final question. Can I honestly say that the dance helps me to be a better Christian? I think if we're honest and look at those questions and honestly answer them, I think we'll see very clearly that the dance is not a place for a Christian. Not a place for young people who we want to become Christians someday. Certainly, nothing good comes from it. The only thing that does come from it is sinfulness. Hebrews chapter 6. I'm going to close with this thought. The Hebrew writer is talking a great deal through the book of Hebrews about how the New Covenant, the New Testament, is so much better than the Old Testament, and he doesn't even bother comparing it with the ways of the world because there's no comparison. It's so much better than that. But he said it's better than the old law. Being a Christian, having Christ as our high priest, on and on. But notice what he says. Chapter 6 and verse 9. He says, "But beloved, we are persuaded," or in other words, "we expect better things of you. And things that accompany salvation, though we thus speak." He says, let me tell you, as Christians, we expect you to be better than the world. Now let me tell you, if you have any doubt, you go ask somebody that frequents dances, that frequents the juke joints and the dance halls and the clubs on the weekends. And you ask them if they go there because they want to be Christian-like. Go ask them if they go there because they think it's going to help them be better in God's sight. Because it's an amazing thing. Christians who are engaging themselves in things they ought not will lie about it. But worldly people who are engaged in those same things will be brutally honest. You ask that man that goes to the club every Friday and Saturday night why he's going, and he'll tell you, he's going to get a woman. He's not going to get a wife now, he's going to get a woman. He's going to get a woman to go back, go to bed with him that night. That's his goal. And he'll tell you, to be honest with you, chances are, not if you ask him right there in the club while he's trying to do it, "Get away from me, you're ruining my attempt here." But you just ask him, say, "Why did you go to the club last Saturday night?" "I went down there to get drunk and get a woman." He'll tell you. There's no question about it in his mind why he's going. But why would we as Christians want to pretend that we're going there for some noble cause? There's only one reason that people dance. They dance for the excitement that comes with it is that kind of dancing. Now, it may be, you know, nowadays we've got aerobic dancing that you know, they can sell tape, or a woman can take that tape home and exercises to get that to lose weight. Now, that's not what I'm talking about. That's completely different. We could talk about that another time. But when it comes to the dances that go on at the clubs and at the proms, and you know why young men go to the prom? They go to the prom because they know that one night is their best chance, if you could even use the word best in describing something so simple. That's their best chance of getting whatever girl they go with, or maybe some girl they didn't go with, to bed with them. That's why they go. Because let me tell you, most guys don't really like dancing, and a lot of them aren't even good at it. They just go because they're going to be that close to girls. Now, maybe some people are naive enough to not know that, but you know it now. You know now. Don't be naive any longer. Understand the truth of the matter, that people are engaging in dancing only to fulfill their sinful fleshly desires. There are many avenues that we could travel that are good, wholesome recreation. There are lots of games and activities that we could engage ourselves in. And we need to steer ourselves clear of dancing and head toward those good, fun, clean activities. If you're here this morning and you have a need to respond to the invitation, whether it be an initial obedience to the gospel to become a Christian, to put off those worldly things, or whether it be, as a Christian, perhaps you've engaged in worldly things that you know you shouldn't have, that you need forgiveness of those things, and you need the prayers of the church to help you to be strong in facing those temptations in the future, we ask that you respond to as we stand and as we sing.